A couple of years ago, journalist Gay Talese published an extremely creepy book called The Voyeur's Motel. It's a true story of a motel owner who spent more than 20 years spying on his guests while they had sex. The guy's name is Gerald Foos. He owned the Manor House Motel in Aurora, Colorado, and both he and Talese are the subjects of a new Netflix documentary called Voyeur. Doug Gordon sat down with the directors, Miles Kane and Josh Corey, and I should warn you that some listeners may find parts of this conversation disturbing.
Describe for us what the motel looked like.
It had a high-pitched roof where I could walk down the middle, and I figured that's where I would build my observation platform.
Right.
They couldn't hear me. They couldn't see me, but I could hear them and see them.
Josh, let's talk a bit about what he did to be able to spy on his guests.
So Gerald bought the Manor House Motel in Aurora and retrofitted the attic so that he could use these vents that were installed as essentially a spy facility. He would crawl around in the attic space, peering down below and see couples having intercourse and disrobing, and he would catalog everything. He would write in his journals their age, what they were doing, what acts they participated in a weird way from the attic space. And this is something we try to illustrate a little bit in the film. It's almost like flipping channels to a degree. He's moving from vent to vent, seeing different experiences and living different experiences from this attic space.
Mm. If you see this motel, it's your sort of classic drive-up 1950s era motel. Picture Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. I'm not just trying to be funny. It's surprisingly similar. It's that classic, you know, single-story drive-up motel.
Yeah. So how and when did Gay Talese, this legendary, very famous, acclaimed journalist, discover that Gerald Foos was doing this?
Gerald Foos introduced himself to Gay Talese via a letter in 1980 when Gay was at the height, arguably, of his career and the height of sort of controversy around a new book he was writing called Thy Neighbor's Wife. Was a 10-year effort to sort of document the changing sex lives of Americans. And he very famously participated in some of those events, staying at a swingers commune. And it was really like the height of controversy at the time. So I think Gerald Foos saw him as his author, and he wrote Gay Talese a letter, ultimately sort of seducing him with a story I think he must have known would be too good to pass up.
Yeah, and Talese actually observed, well, because he needed to for journalistic reasons, he needed to confirm that this was actually true. So he actually went up onto the observation platform and looked through the supposed vents to observe a little bit, right?
You know, obviously, yes. As a journalist, that's what sort of was the hook, line, and sinker.
You could see light coming up from certain spots. You're hearing televisions. He leaned over one spot where there was light, and he pointed down, and we looked upon a very good-looking couple engaged in oral sex. And I leaned closer and closer, watching intently. And then I felt a man's hand on my neck. And it was the voyeur who crawled around and pulled me up very quietly but firmly and looked at him. And that damn tie of mine, my red silk tie, was only like a couple of feet from the head of the woman giving a up to this guy on his bed. Jesus. He said, you have to be careful with that tie.
What did both of you think of Gerald Foos the first time you met him?
He's a very strange guy.
It was a highly anticipated meeting, too. I mean, of course, you hear the word voyeur, you hear man in the attic, you have all these connotations that come up with just the collective unconscious of what a voyeur looks like and Norman Bates and all this stuff. Josh, you were there for the first meeting.
Gerald Foos is definitely a little bit different than you might expect. I mean, he's definitely creepy and comes off as, especially when he's talking about the voyeur tales, talks about it almost in this lighthearted way, which is so strange to hear.
Yeah.
But in other ways, Gerald is just looks like a, not a regular guy, but he wasn't as dark and brooding and strange as maybe, I don't know what you'd expect a voyeur who lived in the attic for 20 years to look and act like, but, you know, he was kind of jovial and he was kind of making weird jokes. And
I was picturing Gollum. A Gollum-like character.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
But I always describe him actually to people over the years of, you know, trying to explain to people what we're making. I always try to describe Gerald as if Elvis had lived to his 80s. Picture that, especially when he has his hair dyed.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good description.
He has these huge glasses, which are a very big part of his look, mm-hmm. which definitely gives him a larger than life.
He's got like a Colonel Sanders vibe too.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
If Colonel Sanders and Elvis made it and had a baby, a love child, it would be...
Yeah, it's a perfect...
Yeah, if they bought a motel.
Yeah.
I had an individual come into my motel, had a bucket of chicken from the Colonel, sat down on the bed, pulled out about that thick of napkins, set them over here on the side of the bed, and then proceeded to eat this chicken. Sometimes that made me hungry. And then, of course, his hands were... What did he do? He just reached down and picked up the bedspread like this. And...
He upstairs got so angry, he said, son of a bitch, son of a bitch.
And he goes, who said that? And he went to the window, and he pulled back the drape, and he looks down this way. Then he looks down that way, and nobody there.
He was not discovered, but that's the one time he kind of lost his cool.
One of the things that I find so fascinating about Gerald Foos is that he kept this very detailed document, which he calls the Voyeur's Journal, and he believes that he's doing this really important research, this groundbreaking research along the lines of Alfred Kinsey and Masters and Johnson. Also, he describes his motel as a laboratory. Do you agree with Foos's view of his voyeurism?
For us, it was important just to put that in the film because it was important for the viewer to understand how Gerald sees himself.
Yeah.
Susan Morrison from The New Yorker says very on in the film, and when Miles and I were editing the film, it was important for us to bring this quote up early.
You know, he thought of himself as a researcher. A ridiculous claim. I mean, to me, there's never been any question that Foos is really disturbed, you know, a certain kind of sociopath who just... needed the attention.
The reason that was important for us is because we didn't want the viewer to think that we were drinking the Kool-Aid in the way that we saw Gerald. We know what he did. We know that this is a sexual obsession. We don't think of him as Masters and Johnson or Kinsey. You know, this is not great research. This is strange, obsessive, detailed research. But at its core, from our take, is it's all about that sexual experience.
One time, he's watching a couple that were very attractive. He's looking forward with much anticipation toward a really a good show of sex. Well, just as they were about to take off their clothes, the guy turned off the lights and the television set. And the voyeur is more than disappointed. He's angry. He's angry. They betrayed his anticipation. What does he do?
I went down the ladder and got in my car.
He puts on the bright headlights, parks it right outside the window. Then he goes upstairs. Now he can see them. The guy sees the lights blazing through the drawn curtains, and he says, some dumb bastard left his lights on.
There's that great scene with Foos and his current wife, Anita, towards the end of the film after the Voyeur's Motel book has come out, and Foos is reading a review of the book, and he's upset that the reviewer describes him as a creep.
Now, this is pointing direct fingers at the voyeur as being just nothing but a creep.
Well, you are.
My God, Anita. I guess so.
At one point during his career as a voyeur, Gerald Foos witnessed a murder. Can you tell me a bit about that?
The murder is a moment when Gerald Foos arguably sort of crosses a line. He doesn't murder anyone directly, but he claims that he's watching a young couple, a drug dealer and his girlfriend, and he's kind of incensed by seeing these drugs sold. And as a result, when they leave for an afternoon, he lets himself into the room with the knowledge of where the drugs are hidden and destroys the drugs. And on return, the drug dealer accuses the girlfriend and
starts slapping her around. She stood up and was in his face. He just reached up and grabbed her by the neck and choked her. And pretty soon he just quit and she fell to the floor.
And you see in the film that there's some serious regret. Suddenly, the fun and games are over. You suddenly see the real weight of the consequences. And it seems as if he viscerally feels conflicted about that.
So he does in some way see himself as somewhat responsible,
yeah.
Which he clearly is.
Well, in the movie, he says, you know, I could be responsible for that. And as viewers, we're like, yeah, and or directly responsible.
There's that one moment in particular where one of you from off camera asked Gerald, if you had to do this all over again, would you still participate with this book?
Mm-hmm.
And then Gay gets upset with you.
What's wrong about this is they already asked you that question with me not there. And then with me here, they're trying to get you to answer differently, which could expose you as a hypocrite. Don't you understand this?
I understand.
This is the way journalism works.
I understand where you're coming
from. These guys
are
not even credible journalists. They're cameramen.
Was there a lot of debate between the two of you about whether or not to include this scene?
I think we knew right away that it was a pretty engaging scene. Whenever you're filming as documentarians, or at least I can speak for us, whenever we're filming, sometimes things go awry. And what's most important as a filmmaker is to kind of just keep your head and not let your emotions take control of the room and just shoot. Always record, always record.
We have Gerald Foose as our subject, and we're watching him react as Gay's subject. But at the moment that Gay blows up at us, I think we're also seeing Gay have his moment as a subject of our doc. And you're suddenly seeing him get emotional. And he's sensing a loss of control, which is what happened to his subject a few scenes ago. I mean, it is a little complicated web.
You talk about layers of voyeurism, Miles. There's this brief moment in the film in which we see Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho on one of the miniature motel TVs in one of the miniature rooms, and it's the scene of Norman Bates, and he's spying on Marion Crane in her room. And it got me thinking that your film is like one of those Russian Matryoshka dolls in which there's a smaller doll contained within each doll, in the sense that Gerald Foose is watching people, Gay Talese is watching Foose, you're watching both of them while you're making the film, and then the audience is the final voyeur. So ultimately, everyone is a voyeur.
The idea of people are outraged, everyone sort of states, this isn't right, voyeurism is wrong, privacy should be respected, yet all of us in some way, obviously Gerald Foose is a more criminal version, some of us more unconscious, but we all are natural curiosity about other people's lives, I think.
But you want, as a documentarian, usually to get as candid and raw moments as possible. And the reason why you want that is because it feels voyeuristic.
Yeah. And then we'll have an additional level of voyeurism when the DVD with your director's commentary comes out. And then you'll get somebody, you should get Foose and Gay to comment on your commentary. And we can just, you know, minds will explode.
Miles Kane and Josh Corey are the directors of the new documentary, Voyeur, which is currently streaming on Netflix. Doug Gordon talked with them.